Hello, I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Imagine discovering an erotic manuscript written by your father. Wait, stop there and just imagine that. Okay, moving on. Instead of dying in shame, you share that manuscript with your friends, die laughing, and turn it into a podcast. That was just the start of the journey shared by Jamie Morton, James Cooper, and Alice Levine of the smash hit global podcast, My Dad Wrote a Porno. Morton's father, under the pen name Rocky Flintstone, wrote a series of erotic novels titled Belinda Blinked 1, 2, and 3. As the title suggests, Belinda is the main character who experiences a series of escapades, largely while at work as a sales representative. Morton and his friends, Cooper and Levine, read along, and they do not stint on the criticism or the humor, although it's usually hard to tell the two apart. Since the show has started, it's gotten endorsements from some A-list celebrities, such as Elijah Wood, Emma Thompson, and Daisy Ridley. And some of those celebs even come on to chat about the show. It didn't hurt that all three of these people are actually experienced broadcasters. While the show feels like an impromptu gathering of friends around the kitchen table, it's really the product of a well-thought-out strategy to develop and market a specific brand of content. And that strategy was highly successful. The global hit podcast has been downloaded more than 200 million times, the team produced and starred in a live HBO comedy special in May, and they've gone on world tour. Morton and Cooper joined Red Bee Deputy Managing Director Eileen Madden at Promax Europe 2019 in Amsterdam to talk about how they made it all happen.
Jamie, thank you so much for joining us here today. Now, so we've seen it. It's one of the most successful podcast brands ever. You saw in the video, it's been downloaded over 160 million times. You've launched a live show, and just a couple of weeks ago recorded your HBO comedy special. Yes. So we're in the presence of entertainment marketing experts, the good people of Promax.
God help you.
Yeah, this is who we are. And we came to put you to task. So my simple question is, you're about to enter season 5. Yeah. And so how have you built the brand and made sure that it wasn't just a flash in the pan, one-hit wonder?
Yeah, it kind of screams one-hit wonder, doesn't it? It's like one joke, my dad's shit at writing, great, and it's porn. So we initially, before we kind of started doing the show, we really thought a lot about tone, kind of how we wanted people to engage with the show and kind of make sure that it was produced in a way that wasn't just going to be a one-hit wonder type thing.
Yeah, we, from finding out Jamie's dad had written the book to when we actually launched the podcast, there was a kind of 10-month period where we were developing branding, getting music composed, having meetings about, like Jamie says, the tone of it, because we wanted it to feel like a conversation between friends around the kitchen table, not, you know, a host-led thing where we just wanted it to feel as inclusive as possible. So we put a great deal of thought into that. And then beyond that, I mean, we never had like a social media strategy or anything like that, but Jamie and I both work in kind of, I work in TV and Jamie works in digital media and things like that. So we both have a background in that. And it was more, I guess, like creative intuition a little bit building, we knew like it was good to build a community around the show. So we branded the listeners early on as Belinkers. So people were kind of proud to be a Belinker. And I think we benefited from the fact that we didn't launch with a big kind of a big noise. People kind of discovered us. We were people's dirty little secret. People liked kind of listening to us on their commute and like laughing to themselves, and no one really knew what they were listening to.
People don't like being force-fed something, I think. People like to feel like they've discovered something organically and that they are then going to more likely to champion something if they feel like they've kind of reached it on their own, as opposed to being told by everyone that they have to listen to it.
Yeah. So your backgrounds in TV are kind of interesting.
Sorry.
You're done.
your background. So you mentioned it already. You kind of had backgrounds in the space of TV. And talk to us a little bit about those backgrounds, just to see, I mean, are they pertinent? Have you ever been to Promax?
No, but we... I know. Bucket list. Tick. Yeah. We used to produce all of the digital strategy for The X Factor for 2 years, James and I. We've worked on a lot of digital kind of companion shows. James created a show called Eating With My Ex that was a digital show first and now is a full-length series on the BBC. So we have got experience in kind of making stuff in the digital space that we use to kind of make a podcast. It was people weren't really making that many podcasts when we first started, so it was useful to have our experience as a kind of almost like a map of how to do things, how things have worked before for us.
Yeah,
okay.
Was helpful.
And Alice works in radio as well, so she kind of came from an audio background. So we all kind of brought different things to the table. Jamie edits the show. We've just been very lucky that the three of us kind of came together and could bring different skills and skill sets to the show.
Our skill sets are quite complementary, which is good.
So what would you say you brought then from the world of TV? Because it's sort of, it's a serial show.
Mm. Yeah, well, we kind of were very much about, we wanted it to be in seasons and not be on all year round. We thought this is sort of material that couldn't sustain being on every week. People would get really sick of it. I would probably be dead because I'd be having to read my dad's porn every day. But we really thought that it would be something that we wanted to have a season, then go away for a year, let people miss you and then come back with a bang, and then hopefully you've retained a dedicated fan base enough that they all come back and listen, which is what's happened. So that was quite...
Born out of the fact that the material is finite as well. You know, we only have a certain amount of books for these things, so we didn't want to kind of blow our load in one go.
Yeah.
And that helped us. And also, like, what helped us with the show was there was a narrative of sorts there, you know, like the books are a narrative that you follow.
Absolutely.
they're increasingly becoming
stuff happens. Stuff happens.
Stuff does happen.
So we knew there was a reason for the audience to come back every week. It wasn't just the three of us chatting, because you get bored of that very quickly, believe me. Yeah. But there is a narrative there that kind of keeps you coming back every week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then Jamie, you know, it is a loose conversation, but Jamie really kind of tightly edits the show. So we learn a lot about, like, you know, when to let a joke finish, when to get out of something.
Post-production. They're not so much now. I think people are more in tune to this in podcasting now. But at the start, people just used to talk and not edit their podcasts. And they'd be like hours long and they'd be really rambly. I'm militant with our edit. I cut out so much. We record for about 2 hours, do we? And we edit it down to like half an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm very much like lose stuff all the time.
Yeah, I mean,
the
production values are noticeable sort of across the brand, I would say.
Mm.
So that's something presumably you guys had to think a lot about before. You said it was 10 months between.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I think, you know, maybe this is from my background as well, but I think if you're expecting strangers to listen to or watch something that you've made, you owe them the best, you know, 30 minutes of content you can create. I think just to not think about how you're going to present it, how you're going to package it up is kind of
your
audience a disservice, I think.
Disrespectful. So what really stands out for you guys, it's not just a podcast brand. I mean, book, the live show is probably the one of the more, if we just cut to the screens. Yeah, the live show is, there we go. It was 70,000 people you've performed in front of. So how did the live show come about? How did you sort of make the leap from one medium?
It's Alice's very important presentation there.
It wasn't really part of a plan as such. Someone was doing a London podcast festival and said, would you like to take the podcast live? And we did. We thought it was a really good idea. And we'd seen that it was starting to be a way to kind of expand the brand,
podcasting as well.
But we wanted it to be, and this is kind of something we've thought about every time we've taken it into a new area. There has to be a reason for it. It has to be offering something new to the podcast.
Right.
So we developed it, and we were like, how do we make it more visual, but beyond us kind of just chatting on stage? So we introduced a couple of extra elements, like you saw Alice's presentation on the vagina and the female productive system. We get audience members up on stage to recreate a scene from the book. We have them play characters.
Right.
We try to make it more of a show than just... Because, that's the thing. The podcast is one thing, and the podcast is what we're proudest of, and that everything else comes from the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about making sure that the offerings in other areas are always different.
And our live show isn't something that we ever put on our podcast feed. You only see that version of the show if you go to the live show. So a lot of podcasts have live podcasts that...
We were talking about this. You have a whole... There is a YouTube channel dedicated to My Dad Wrote a Porno, but you guys aren't the masterminds behind
that. Yeah, that's not ours. That needs to be taken down immediately. YouTube is it. That would be great.
But what about that transition then to video? Something obviously must have switched because you're going to do it now.
Yeah.
Or
what made you think, okay, actually it's time to record this and move into... Or how long have you been thinking about taking it into TV? This is our area of expertise.
We hadn't, quite honestly. We never made the podcast in the mindset of one day we could get a TV show out of this, you know. My dad's porn just needs to be on screens all over the world. That wasn't kind of what we were thinking. So opportunities kind of come to us,
yeah.
And we most of the time we say no to most things.
Okay.
Because we have a very strict kind of, like James was saying, every new line of business has to feel organically relevant to itself.
Yeah.
We don't want to just do a TV show because someone offers us a TV show. That would be a bad way of...
That'd be embarrassing.
Well, but it wouldn't be a good show. And,
yeah.
And you have to really stay true to what you're doing and make sure that a TV show has a real reason for being and it's offering an audience something that the podcast isn't.
Great.
That's always been something that we've thought.
Yeah, and we've thought a lot about, because we've been offered like scripted versions of the show, like where we take kind of Jamie's story and make that. And we're like, is that right? Is that so far away from what makes the podcast a success that it's the right, like... Sometimes it's just not the right fit, and you, like Jamie says, you don't want to do something for the sake of doing it. So what we're doing now is, essentially, we're filming our live show, and it feels like a kind of natural evolution. We'll see how this goes, and then there might be other stuff that comes from it.
And it was nice working with HBO as well, because they're obviously a great champion of different sorts of content. They are big risk takers,
yeah.
As a broadcaster, and they felt like they were a nice fit in terms of prestige and... kind of, they really let us get on with it, didn't they? They let us make the show that we wanted to make, and I think that was really attractive to us, as opposed to having a million people with notes all the time being like, have you thought about this? It's like, they trusted that we knew our show, we knew our audience, and they wanted us to make the show that we thought would be right for their channel. So they were great in that respect.
And I think that's the other thing that's kind of got us to this point, is we've been very, almost annoyingly kind of, we've held the brand to our chest. We don't really invite many people in. We still run our own social media. We still do all the day-to-day on it. And we really try, like, we're very protective of the brand and we're very clear about kind of what we want to do with it.
Someone once said to me, like, quite early on, that when we first started to get a lot of listeners, they were like, hey, one day you won't have to edit the show anymore. As if that would be some sort of a sensible thing that you could just give away, probably the most important part of the process to somebody that you don't know. But we enjoy doing it. We are in it to make a show on every level, not just host it. We want to make it. We want to edit it. We want to be in control of it at every stage. That's what is attractive to us as content makers. So, it's really important to retain control as much as possible, but also trust people to come in and know when they have expertise that you don't, and
well, with
lean
HBO,
on them.
You're in good hands. At
exactly,
least.
We thought that, you know, okay, well, let HBO have some
say. So I want to talk a little bit about the marketing and this idea that you've built the brand from your kitchens into this global phenomenon. So the first is the name. When I told my mom what I was going to be doing in Amsterdam, she had some questions for me. As you can imagine.
My mom's had many questions throughout this process.
So it's provocative. Who came up with it? You know, it comes. It's got its highs, its lows, its goods, its bads.
We knew it was provocative, but that's kind of why we chose it. A, it kind of gets across what the concept is. You know what you're getting straight off the bat. B, you're going to maybe give it a click and give it a try, even if you're not sure.
Yeah.
And it's going to get people talking, like your mum.
Yeah.
I mean, there were
it's shameless clickbait, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And it is.
It's total clickbait.
And it was deliberately that, yeah.
But it has had negative effects. In the early days, you know, iTunes wouldn't promote, like, you know, as far as kind of getting the word out, people weren't willing to promote us. Advertisers wouldn't necessarily come on board. I mean, that has changed now, thankfully, but...
Not with every advertiser. Like, there are still big companies that advertise on podcasts that won't touch us.
Really?
I won't name them and give them the... promotion that they won't give us.
So it was a risk we took, but we thought it was a risk worth...
Yeah, and your social handles kind of suffered as a result, but they're inconsistent as a result. And I don't know who follows. My dad wrote a pointer across.
Yeah, our social handles are different on every platform, which is a
Instagram won't let you put porn in your handle, and I don't know why.
But Facebook will. They are owned by the same company.
Weird.
Still.
That is weird.
Yeah. So we're like, my dad wrote on Instagram, right?
Mm.
And dad wrote a pointer on Twitter.
That's good for brand extension. He can maybe write something else.
Yeah, my dad wrote loads of different
genres. So what do you guys do to gear up to a new season launch then? You're in season five. What are you going to do sort of in your ramping up for season five?
There's two things. One is obviously you want to get the existing audience excited that it's there, but it's also a good opportunity to get new people back on board because the content's always there and what's nice is people are always discovering it.
Yeah.
So we figure that launching a new season is the best time to kind of build some noise and some conversation around it. So we always create kind of a video trailer with it. So we create some new kind of social assets tied around whatever that season is about. Like last season you saw in the, we created this like, it started to turn into kind of a spy novel at this point.
Yeah.
And there was a spy within the Pots and Pans organization and no one knew who it was and everyone, and no one cared. But so we made this kind of Bond song and kind of video to go alongside it and branded this whole season as this kind of Bond themed season. So every we just make sure that we really go big on it. And then as a result, we had like 80 of our episodes were in the top 200 and things like that. So it really pays off when you go big to come back and.
Nice.
And we're fortunate as well because it's a like James said, it's a narrative based show. You know, we are telling a story of sorts. We're reading books. People kind of have to go back to the beginning to get on board with our show. So we tend to have a really great back catalogue. In terms of people can discover it from the start and go on the journey themselves, as opposed to a lot of podcasts that are every day or out every week, if you'd only kind of dip in on that week, then just continue listening from that point.
Yeah.
You'd very rarely go back to their back catalogue and kind of listen from the beginning. So
not that when you go back, you understand why.
Oh, there's no point.
No.
I mean, you know,
you do.
You don't have to, but.
So you mentioned earlier, James, about social media marketing, and you guys are really religious about calling out your handles and inviting for audience participation. Mm. And what's interesting is you said that wasn't always part of the plan, at least even though you launched in the era of social media, it wasn't necessarily you thought that was going to be such a big growth strategy for you. But how has that developed? How has social media marketing developed?
James's smile is because he always wanted it.
It's Alice and Jamie that went through.
I wasn't that sure. Alice didn't want it particularly at the beginning. And then, because James worked in it, he really kind of sold the importance of it. And actually, you were completely right, because we basically sold our entire world tour on the back of our Instagram
account. Wow,
So the power of social is really important when you can harness it properly.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do things like, at the start, and the start episode and the end episode of every season, we do these listening parties where we have everyone press play at a certain time and tweet along with the show together. And people engage with it all over the world. They have, they make meals based on dishes from the show.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
People get up at like,
have you got something?
Yeah, I do.
People get up at like 4 a.m. in different countries to kind of be involved. And this is some of our fan
artwork. I haven't even seen that. It's fan artwork. You know, people have created their own covers for the show.
Yeah.
People dress up at our live shows.
Yeah.
So we tried to encourage a real kind of.
We've got really creative listeners, and wow, and they aren't shy either, which is great.
And it's you kind of have your own hashtag Monday.
Their mum made them that costume.
Wow! Yeah. Wow! They need to get their own podcast to tell that story.
I know.
So Monday is hashtag porno day.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, that's like you kind of calendarized porn into people's lives in a socially acceptable way, or maybe no acceptable way, which is great. So that's a big part of your social strategy as well.
It is. And also kind of having a uniform day, back to when we first started coming up with the concept, we knew that we wanted to have to be really stringent on when our show came out. Like, it has to come out on a Monday morning. Everyone knows that it comes out on a Monday morning. People just started adopting porno. I think because it's after the weekend, people are back to work.
Yeah.
They're like, oh God, there's a little, you know, Monday morning pick me up. So they like their porn on their commute. Which is nice.
But it was all about feeding into that community narrative, you know, everyone listens on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
We do the listening parties, people kind of send us fan art. Giving them the name Belinkers, it's all classic stuff that everyone knows, but it was just important to this show. And it kind of, what's been fun about the narrative of the social as well is there's just this big joke that this whole thing's got bigger than anyone kind of ever expected.
Yeah.
Jamie's dad wrote Porn in the Garden Shed and look where it is now. And it's been fun for the listeners on social to kind of follow that journey. And it's just a big joke.
They've gone on it with us and they're the reason that it's got to this point. So they feel a real ownership of the show as well, which is really nice.
Which is great. Which is great. You've had some really incredible celebrity endorsements. We sort of heard about them really quickly just there in the intro video, but we're talking A-list, like Elijah Wood and Michael Sheen and Daisy Ridley and Emma Thompson. How did that come about? Who sought those?
They get in touch with us. They out themselves as perverts. Nicholas Holt there, obsessed with his Rocky Flintstone mug. They get in touch and they let it be known that they're interested. And we, Elijah Wood was the first guest we had on. And we just thought it'd be funny to ask him to come on, and we didn't think he'd say yes. And then when he did, we were like, oh, okay. Then it kind of set a precedent, and people wanted to kind of come on, and yeah. Emma Thompson invited us around to her kitchen, which was really fun. She cooked for us, and we had a really drunken evening with her, which was really nice.
Amazing.
And it's nice to kind of open up the world of the books through celebrities coming on the show, because they have so many questions. And then it kind of gives a platform for, you know, how they think about the books, what they think of my dad. And it's been quite good to kind of open up the show in that way as well. Things that we couldn't do, the three of us on our own.
And those endorsements are invaluable, obviously. Yeah. Kind of, it legitimizes the show in a way that having Elijah as the first guest just really helped, I think, cement it as a thing, if you like. But yeah, and what's nice is the content's really good. Like, it's a chat. They don't come on to promote anything or anything like that. It's just a nice chat about these porn books.
Yeah. And they're obsessed.
Yeah, I know.
With my dad's porn. It's worrying.
Yeah. Like, copious notes, some of them.
Oh, my God, they know. They all bring, like, a notepad or their phone of notes and, with questions. And,
Who's been your favourite guest?
Emma Thompson.
I was going to say I couldn't possibly say.
Only because I just couldn't believe we ended up kind of getting her involved.
Totally.
And it was...
Yeah.
And she was great.
Yeah, of course
she is brilliant.
So how would you guys say that success has changed the way that you've done things?
Not really, actually. We've really fought against any of those, like, because we've been offered professional studios to do it in, and like Jamie says, we're constantly offered stuff to be involved with that we say no to.
Yeah.
So we still record the podcast around the kitchen table, and the thing we're still proudest of and the thing we're still focused on the most is the podcast.
And we don't mention the success of the show in the podcast, because that would just feel so...
Gross.
Yeah, and self-serving and why.
That would be gross.
Nothing else
would be gross.
Yeah. The books aren't gross at all, but I think there's a way that, you know, you can... I think it's important to shout about yourself and to make sure that people are aware of your brand, but I think it's a fine line to kind of believe your own hype in that way and be like, and try and then fold that into the show that you make. You know, people came to the show not because it was a success or not. You shouldn't listen to a show and know how many people listen to it.
Well, there's a lot of charm kind of in the relationship you guys have with each other. I think people buy into that as much, or if not more than anything. So the question I think a lot of people will have is what's next? I mean, every celebrity guest who comes on has sort of nabbed a part in what they believe is going to be a major feature film.
Of course.
Is that happening? Where is it going to go?
We don't really, there are many things that are kind of
in the pipeline.
In the pipeline.
We've said this before, but like our big ambition is to do a musical with it one day. We can really see it as a kind of, it's got, you know, the absurdist elements of the porn and then this really interesting story about a father and son and kind of all that.
the breakdown of a relationship,
So we'd love to make a musical of it one day.
He just wants a chorus line of vaginas on stage. That's all he really wants.
I just want a song and dance.
They'll do the
camp. We all do.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you guys were to go back, how many years is it now? Is it four years? Okay, if you were to go back.
The longest 4 years.
Oh, it's a good thing you're good friends. If you were to go back and start it all over again, what would you do differently, if anything?
I don't know.
Well, uniformed social handles, obviously. make it easier. I don't know, like, enjoy it a bit more, probably.
Yeah.
Just because when something happens that, especially because it's such a personal thing to me, it kind of exploded so quickly and it was a bit disorientating for a while, and it's taken us time to kind of adjust to it and that sort of thing. So maybe that for me, but I mean, I think we're just
And that's
really
not to be like, oh, it's been perfect, but like, it's just been a, I don't know, just been an interesting, we've learned a lot doing it, definitely.
Because we're just mates, and it's just been a really nice experience, which has been helpful.
It's just been nice.
It's been really good. We'll be doing it anyway.
If no one was listening, I love
it. We used to make stuff all the time that no one watched or cared about. So.
But that's all we've got time for, which feels too fast. But thank you so much, everyone, for coming. And
thank you for
Jamie
coming.
And James, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Paige Albaniak is editorial director of Promax. Andres Trujillo, Promax's social media and community manager, produced this podcast. Video helper provides the music. Digital content producer Kayla Marie Hardaway contributes to Daily Brief. Promax is rebranded to just Promax, so you can find us on Promax Global on Facebook and Promax _ Global on Twitter and Instagram. You can also always reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.